Hi everyone, I'm Liam and welcome to another episode of Exploring the NQS, a bonus series from the Early Education Show exclusively for our Patreon supporters. So if you're listening to this, that means you're supporting the main show, which means I want to start with a big thank you. The main show will always be free, but those of you who choose to actually support us financially really, really help us out. In Exploring the NQS, I take a look at one element of the National Quality Standard, one at a time, until I've covered all 40. My background is as an early childhood educator and teacher, centre director, and I currently oversee professional learning and development for Northside Community Service, a not-for-profit early education provider based in Canberra. All right, let's get started with this week's episode. On this episode, we're looking at element 3.2.2, Resources, Support, Play-Based Learning, one of the longer element titles. It's part of Quality Area 3, Physical Environment, and it's the second element of Standard 3.2, Use. The description for this element is, resources, materials, and equipment allow for multiple uses, are sufficient in number, and enable every child to engage in play-based learning. All right, so what's this one all about? Well, we've got a pretty long title and we've got a pretty long description. It's kind of all there in those formal parts of this element. But in context of Quality Area 3, so in terms of the other elements we've been looking at over the last few weeks, we can kind of say we've set up the space, we have the room or the building, we have the furniture that then gone into it, and now it's kind of time for the details, the resources, the toys, we might say, the activities, the experiences, as it's referred to in the description for the element, resources, materials, and equipment. So we've kind of got the building blocks, now we're adding these things in terms of how children are going to use them with the support of adults. And then we need to think about a few questions. Do they work for the children that are accessing the centre? Is there enough? This is a really big one and has some regulatory implications as well for the making sure you have enough resources for all the children there. So this element's really about sort of that last stage of setting up our environment, getting to the detail of what are we putting in these spaces. All right, so let's take a look at this element in practice. This is another one of those ones that there's a couple of things here for me. This is the one I think I mentioned in the last element is bewaring fads. So looking out for those, again, not pointing at any particular approaches or philosophies or anything like that. But I think in this area, we can really be swept up in the latest fad. It might be something like, loose parts or natural materials, all those kind of things. And it's not to say those things are bad by no means at all. I think they're really important parts of the majority of early childhood classrooms. But it is important we don't devote ourselves wholly to a particular fad. So that's one particular point about the first thing about thinking about how we go into those things, because it's right there in the element description. It is a range of materials. We want to make sure that our spaces have a whole variety of different things, and that will include the dreaded plastic, which we've got a long way to getting rid of, and probably in a good way. There was a lot of that in services, and you do not want your early education space looking like a McDonald's ball pit. But it's not to say that there isn't a place for those materials. It's actually important that children have access to a wide range of materials. That's called out in the guide to the NQF, which includes natural, man-made, built, found items, recycled items, recreated items, all those different kind of things. A good early education environment in terms of the resources will have a variety of those kind of things. So, thinking about where you can source a whole range of the things of these things, how are children experiencing, just from a sensory perspective, different kinds of materials as they engage with. It also sparks creativity. And this is where the multi-use, aspect of resources has become a much bigger part of our thinking about early education environments, is that single-use items can be challenging. And what we mean by that is, if you have a toy plane, and people often always think, if you have like a plastic plane that looks exactly like a plane, it's actually the same thing for me with a wooden plane. It's just a different material. But if you have something that looks and it works as a plane, it's hard for a child to use that in any other way. It can kind of only be used as a plane. Whereas if you have some blocks that children can put together, with some cardboard or with some other things that make their own plane, that's obviously something that, those blocks are multi-use items. So we do want to have a focus on them. But again, it's not either or. I think you want a greater focus on multi-use items, but you also want to have some of those things where, children can use those other things, maybe in combination with other resources in the space. So having a single-use item isn't bad in and of itself, but if you have a space full of single-use items, that is a big problem. The other thing to think about here is this: is the resources are really just about meeting the needs of the children in your space. And the other sub thing to think about that, which is where it gets more complicated, is that the needs of children are changing in your space all the time. So even if you have, you know, the perfect resource set up at the start of the year, I don't know what perfect would be. I don't think there is perfect in this, but, you know, for the sake of this discussion, you know, you have this perfect setup for, say, you know, your 2 to 3 space at the start of the year in January. You've got everything you need and it's being engaged with really well. That environment, you know, in December won't work anymore. Those children have spent 12 months growing, developing, continuing their amazing journey of growth and development. Those resources won't work anymore. So meeting the changing needs of children is a really important and complex part of what we do. This is another one of those parts where we acknowledge the complexity of educator work, is that you're constantly sort of fiddling and recreating. And what I mean by that isn't, you know, once a month throwing everything out and getting everything new in. That's not okay. It would stress you out, blow your budget. And it's actually not fair to children as well. Children should have an expectation that they have some familiarity with the space and they may want to return to items again and again. But what it means is that you're, you know, what I would call, you know, kind of fiddling around the edges a little bit, or you know, getting rid of one thing and bringing one new thing in and just looking at what's working and what's not. So meeting the changing needs of children is a really important part of this particular element. And in terms of how you can approach this, it's often through trial and error. And the way it'll work is you'll kind of know instinctually as an educator with the children you're working with, what are the resources that are being used well? What are the ones that are being cared for and looked after by children? What are the ones that are popular? But it's not just about popularity, it's about how they're used as well. Are they engaged? Are they sparking conversations? Are they encouraging collaboration between children? Having a balance of toys that to balance of resources, I should say, that spark collaboration, as well as things that children can play with on their own, is also really important and fits in with that range of materials I was talking about in the previous point. But you want to think, you know, what's being used really well, and then conversely, what isn't being used really well. There's no hard and fast rule for this, but the kind of things that are always, you know, kind of scattered on the floor, or maybe are tipped out and then walked away from, or, you know, just aren't being engaged with at all, or taking up space in your room, valuable real estate in your room, which we know we often don't have a lot of, or just things that are creating conflict that isn't easily resolved, things that children are struggling to engage with, all those different kinds of things. You may want to think about, is this something that needs to be brought out later? Is it something that, you know, we should have got rid of a little while ago for whatever reason? Is it broken? You know, is a really important thing in particular. We want to really think about in connection with our sustainability focus. You know, if there are toys that are toys and resources and activities that are broken, in disrepair, and, you know, aren't suitable for their use, we really need to think about, well, how can we dispose of those, you know, in ways that support our sustainability focus. But what I worry sometimes is with the sustainability focus is I see services hanging on to things that do need to go, and it is a balance, and we shouldn't have children having to use toys that are broken and not working anymore just because we, you know, we're worried we'll get marked down at assessment and rating for throwing them out. The other thing to think about here is how do we involve children in particular, but also families and the wider community in how we set up our spaces? This is a really interesting question and is part of the overall focus of the National Quality Framework, which is that individual services should reflect the individual community they're in. And that doesn't just mean the location in which suburb or city or town you're in, but, you know, the particular group of children and families that are with you at that period of time. How are you sort of engaging them in the process? And I think this is done in, you know, pretty subtle ways, which is, you know, speaking with children and families about the things they enjoy engaging with at home. I'm a particular big fan of going to families for recycled and upcycled and secondhand resources. There's always a risk with that. You'll often get a lot of things you don't need, but there's often some gems in there. I worked at a wonderful service where their previous director had a big, a huge box of where families could put in recycled materials for play, so old cereal boxes for home corner and all those kind of things, and large cardboard boxes. You know, there's ways you can engage families with that. And the important thing about that is it's a two-way street. You can then use those opportunities of engaging with families in particular to explain why you have these particular resources. And we don't want, you know, classrooms full of soft teddy bears and all those kind of things. We actually want resources that spark curiosity, spark imagination, spark collaboration between children. Involving children, this is kind of, we did that when we're talking about point two, is listening to children as they engage or don't engage with things. We often think about listening with children. We think about sitting children down at group time and asking what they like and don't like, and that's good. We can do that as well. But listening also means just engaging, you know, observing their play, observing their engagement with the space. That's a big part of listening as well. But you can absolutely, particularly in preschool spaces, but, you know, no reason why not with toddlers, and in different ways with babies, is sit and ask them what they like about the space, what they don't like, what games are they feeling they can and cannot play. That's particularly good for things like dramatic play, where, you know, children, you know, maybe want to engage in a particular way of play and they don't quite have the resource available for it. And there's a really good discussion then you can have with children about how that can work. All right, so let's have a think about some suggestions for nominated supervisors. The big one here is, and I kind of touched it a bit, you know, in terms of the fads and those kind of things, is don't just go with the flow, either externally. So don't, because, you know, the center down the road or a workshop you went to propose this one method of doing it, and, you know, and just do this, you know, don't take that as gospel. Make sure you're really thinking about it. But it also happens internally as well. And I know this is often a really difficult thing to fight against, is when you maybe start as a new director or you inherited a whole bunch of resources and the cupboard from the previous regime at the center is, it seems like a huge big job to go through that and sort it all out and figure what we want to keep and don't. So you kind of just go with the flow. You kind of go, well, this is what we've got, and we'll buy some new things as we go along, but, you know, we probably won't think about it too much. Is really, you do really need to think to succeed in this element, and particularly to exceed in this element, you really need to be, you know, conducting an audit or really thinking about those resources you have. You know, and the questions are, what are the needs of the children in the space? What do we want children to be experiencing and engaging with their resources? And then, you know, what isn't working? What are the resources that either we don't have enough of or are broken or are just not being engaged with the children at the moment or don't reflect your philosophy about how you think about children? Because one of the important parts of this element is obviously having enough resources for children. You know, there's a whole hour you could spend on what enough means, and I know that's it's a really interesting conversation to have with whoever's regulating your service. If you have a particular person who comes out and does announced or unannounced visits, how do you define enough? I'm a big fan of spaces that aren't cluttered and have space for children to move around in. How do you balance that with making sure there are areas that children can access? There's no one right answer to that, but I would look at, you know, making sure you do have enough storage space. If you don't, really thinking, what are the creative solutions around that? Can you bring in additional storage items that can be kept in other spaces? But you know, that focus on enough resources is something that kind of sits at the nominated supervisor level. You really need to work with your teams to support that. And the other thing I would be thinking here is with your teams, making sure they're really documenting their approach to what they're putting in the space. So it's not just about flicking the MTA catalog or the educational experience catalog open once a month and getting a little budget to spend the money on. And then, you know, it comes, it arrives in the big packages and you put it in the classrooms. And I should say, there's nothing wrong with ordering from catalogs. Again, from a wide variety of sources, always hold that. When anyone ever tells you, you know, don't do that or don't do that, the NQS is really clear, a wide range of sources for these things. So, you know, do what works for your service, but make sure it's, you know, there's a diversity there. You know, it's not just about ordering from the catalog and putting it in the classroom when it arrives. Really thinking about, why are we ordering this, and as best as we can. And again, not writing reams and reams and reams of paper, but, you know, a couple of quick dot points or a photo about, you know, what we're going to change and how we're going to engage in that space is really important. The documentation of that process is particularly important for assessment and rating. Again, not huge amounts, but making sure you're getting that down somewhere. With a suggestion for the quality improvement plan this time, again, probably just, you know, fairly straightforward one in terms of the element, how you approach it is quite complex. But what I would be putting in my quality improvement plan would be, resources are regularly reviewed to ensure they're suitable for the current needs of children at the service. And that's really opens it up then for how you do that. Is it a checklist? Is it an audit? Is it more of a collaborative process that involves a whole range of people? Is it a project that goes on for a while? But, you know, demonstrating you've gone through that process is really great for that assessment and rating process. All right, that's it for this week. Thanks to everyone for continuing to listen. We'll be back with the last element of Quality Area 3 next week, and then the week after that, the Quality Area 3 overview. We're really barreling through these elements. Thanks for everyone who's enjoying listening. Again, as I said last week, you know, please leave a comment. Get in touch if you're enjoying the show. It's great to hear from all our listeners. But until next week, it's goodbye from me.